This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Yik. Now, if you're a smoker, there's a strong chance that you puffed on your first stick at the age of 18 or perhaps even younger. According to the US Centers for Disease Control, nearly 9 out of 10 smokers start before the age of 18. And every adult who dies early because of smoking is replaced by 2 new young smokers. Now, this is why some people believe that Malaysia's generational endgame announced recently, which aims to ban the sale of cigarettes for a new generation, could potentially see a significant reversal of the smoking trend in the country. But, you know, how much impact will it have? And, you know, what we want to do for today's show is to really find out what is this addiction, you know, that smoking, how does it get its hooks onto people? We're going to find out from consultant psychiatrist, associate professor, Dr. Amir Siddiq bin Amir Noordin, here with us for his regular show. And also joining us, 2 former smokers, and they will share what it really takes and what it took for them to overcome their addiction. Thank you so much for joining me today. I think perhaps I want to start with our 2 special guests today, if you don't mind, Dr. Amir, to let them have the spotlight for a little bit and we can hear from them. Haris, perhaps you'd like to share first. What is your story when it comes to smoking? When did you pick up your first cigarette?
Okay, actually, I started at a quite very young age. I started at age 14 when I was in Form 2 at school because I think like every other teenagers who started smoking at such an age, felt cool to, you know, it felt like an adult thing. But it wasn't serious. It's just, you know, just puffing. I think I only got addicted much later after I started going into university. And then I really like hooked up to smoking.
Would you say you were a heavy smoker by that time?
Yes, very heavy actually. Certain period of time during when I was a student, I could go to, this is during examination days, lah. I could go up to 3 boxes a day. Mm. That is like around 60 sticks.
And so from that age, about early 20s, am I right?
Yes.
And how long were you smoking for?
I smoked since I was 14 until 2018. The last day I picked up cigarette was 31st December 2018. So 2019, it was not a New Year wish, but there's a story about how I got really sick from I got a really bad coughing and I had to quit. So it coincidentally, the first day of 2019, the New Year, the New Year wasn't really a good New Year for me. I was really sick and I had to tell myself it's time for me to quit once and for all. I think that around 20 years, yeah.
All right. What about you, Kumar? What's your story?
My first stick was 11 years old. So,
wow.
Yeah. And that was just the first. And occasionally from then, every few weeks or a few months, I will have a cigarette with my senior friends who were actually in secondary school at that time. So they were the ones who kind of influenced us to be cool. So that's where the cigarette came in. So on and off, I've been smoking until about 15 years old. From 15, I smoked until 19. Then I had a break for 6 months. And then went through a breakup, a relationship breakup. So, you know, another excuse to start again. So then I started for the next 10 years. And I quit totally at when I was 29 years old.
And for both of you, very young ages, teenage, and it seems to be that same narrative of it was something cool. Somebody introduced you to it, right? Somebody influenced you or sort of got you started. Would that be right for both of you?
not really for me. Actually, I saw friends who smoke, but it wasn't really they introduced me to smoking. I felt like I wanted to try, but I was so afraid of my parents back then. So I just I couldn't be associated with friends who, you know, like the kids who are considered as naughty kids who smoke. So I just walked up to the grocery store, and I didn't even know what cigarette to buy. So I just point out to, I want that one box. So I just buy it and tried it. That's when I first started.
And nobody stopped you. I mean, clearly kids not allowed to buy cigarettes. Nobody stopped you?
No. The grocery store keeper also didn't say anything. Just, you know, just took my money and yeah.
So, Dr. Amir, I mean, this is the problem, isn't it? Where young people, number one, it's influence, it's the perception of smoking, and number two, the seemingly very easy access.
I think as our two friends have shared with us, one of the major risk factors that we often see young people taking up is actually peer pressure. And I think hearing from both of our friends over here, one of the major things that came out to me was the fact that they were feeling cool using the cigarette. So that's one of the factors as well. I think second, of course, as we know, in every cigarette, there's going to be a substance inside it that actually encourages people to continue using. I mean, for both the stories, they initially started with one and then eventually it became more. Haris was sharing with us that he went up to 60, which is quite a large number. And Kumar, I think, was mentioning somewhere around a box. However, more importantly, both of them have been smoking it for many, many years before they decided to quit. And again, we see this trend quite often because in the tobacco product, which is what constitutes a cigarette, there will be a substance called nicotine, shall we? And we've heard many times before that nicotine is the addictive substance within that particular product, which encourages people to continue using.
All right. How does nicotine work on the brain such that you can go from one to eventually 60 a day, right? I mean, what exactly is it doing to the brain, and how do you start to increase that craving?
So basically, nicotine is a substance within the tobacco product which actually binds to a receptor in the brain which is naturally there. So that particular receptor in this brain of ours actually works on other neurochemicals, but the nicotine in the tobacco actually hijacks that receptor. And what it does is that it releases a neurochemical called dopamine. So dopamine is the chemical in the brain which causes individuals to feel a heightened sense of pleasure, to feel actually euphoric or very happy. So individuals, so brains that are then introduced to nicotine very early on are craving in a way for that particular substance because the brain is dynamic. Things that makes it feel good, it wants. Things that makes it feel not so good, it does not want. So as you are introduced to this nicotine over time, the brain calls on upon it more and more. So what does it do? So it can't actually tell you in a way to smoke more cigarettes, but it can increase the number of receptors in the brain so that you're always playing catch up. So one cigarette now binds to, say, for example, one nicotine receptor, but the brain has, in a way, said that, oh, I want this thing. So it increases two receptors. Now you're only smoking one cigarette. That's not enough. So the brain, in a way, with the two receptors, calls upon you to have a feeling of uncomfortability or some kind of, this feeling of not so good. And therefore, you might need to smoke two cigarettes in order to feel the same kind of happiness you had with one cigarette. And then it sort of continues to the point that you just keep on smoking a large number of cigarettes. Now, one day somebody decides to tell you that you need to quit. So you try on first instance to go cold turkey, which is often the case and the most common way that individual considers to quit. But because now you have many, many, many receptors that have been produced by the brain, and all of these receptors are calling for the nicotine that you now don't take, and therefore you go into withdrawals, which I'm pretty sure our friends here will be able to share with us later on how it might feel. And this withdrawal is very, for some people, uncomfortable. And therefore, they have a dilemma. Do I go through this uncomfortable feeling or do I continue using? And this is where individuals have difficulties actually stopping as they continue the journey with the cigarettes.
But, you know, when it comes to very young kids starting smoking, does that addictive effect become even more pronounced because perhaps their brains are even more plastic?
Definitely. I mean, one of the major reasons why we often talk about not getting people to smoke, especially early, and also the research is very supportive in the fact that if you the later you smoke, the more likely that you're not going to be addicted towards cigarette smoking or not even deciding to take it. Because if the brain is introduced to nicotine very early in life, as I've shared with you just now, the brain's dynamic, it wants this thing that actually makes it feel happy. The brain is developing until probably about 21. That's why often we don't encourage any use of any substance, of course, at any point of time, but definitely the more younger that individuals are introduced to alcohol, to tobacco, for example, the more susceptible they are towards addiction. And therefore, as the brain is developing, once they're introduced towards nicotine early on, they develop moving towards that path. And that's where it becomes very difficult for individuals, or it becomes a challenge for individuals to quit their tobacco use.
We'll go for a quick break now. And when we come back, I'd like to find out from Kumar and Harris, what did they get out of smoking? What was it about puffing on a cigarette that kept them going? Today on Mind Matters, I'm discussing smoking addiction. What gets people, especially young people, started and hooked on smoking, and what it will take for them to overcome the addiction? What does that journey look like? I'm speaking to Associate Professor Dr. Amir Sidik bin Aminuddin, consultant psychiatrist, and two former smokers, Kumar and Harris. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. Health and Living, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Shao Ik. On Mind Matters today, Associate Professor Dr. Amir Sidik bin Aminuddin, consultant psychiatrist, joining me. We also have two former smokers on the show with us today, Kumar and Harris. They're sharing their journey of what made them pick up smoking at a very young age, at the age of 11 for Kumar, 14 for Harris, which eventually became years of smoking. And we'll eventually be finding out from them what got them started on the process of quitting smoking. So, Kumar, I want to find out from you. You know, you said that you quit at 19. 6 months later, after a breakup, you started again. And, you know, what you said earlier was it was an excuse to start smoking again. Now, I want to dig a little bit more into that. How did smoking make you feel good when you were going through a difficult time?
Yes, so in that 6 months that I did not smoke, life was good. So life was good in a way that smoking is not required in a way for me. So when life becomes difficult, we try to find an excuse. I found an excuse to get back to smoking, which I actually kind of missed in that 6 months. So I saw an opportunity. I said, I'm going back right into it. And I blame the breakup for it.
All right. So, you know, and this is for both of you, Kumar and Harris. When you were right in sort of the really active years of smoking, what would it have felt like if you couldn't go for a smoke? Let's say it would have been your usual time to go for a cigarette break or something like that. If you couldn't go for it, what did you experience?
For me, it felt really, you know, uncomfortable. You feel like some sort of incomplete. It's like you cannot function properly, like especially during work when you're stressed out. They're like, yeah, I'm a journalist, you know, you have to changing deadlines and things like that. And sometimes you have to brainstorm what to ask people and things like that. It really, you know, if you don't have cigarette, it feels like you cannot work properly. It's like the idea doesn't flow. And it's not even that. I think it has come to an extent that when I was going out from home to go to work, even the feeling that, you know, not having a pack of cigarette in my pocket, it just doesn't feel right.
What about you, Kumar?
It didn't really affect me in this way so much. Because in my line of work, I have to go hours without having a cigarette. So I'm kind of used to that. So I always tell myself I need to have a cigarette before I start work and after I complete my job. But when I'm on my off days, actually, I just smoke for fun. Especially when you have a meal. After a meal, it's like a cigarette completes the meal.
Mm.
Like when you go drinking, you need to have that. So besides that, if I'm sick, I can go on for days without smoking. Or when I'm working, I have no choice. So it's fine, but if I'm forced to do it, for when I was trying to quit, the side effects there was like getting irritated and... because now it's like I can do it, but I'm not doing it.
Mm. I'm
forced to not do it. So that's when you get irritated. But when there were times at work and all that, it was manageable.
Mm. Dr. Amir, when you work with clients who are on their smoking cessation journey, what is it that brings them to you? What gets them started on this idea that they want to quit?
Well, first of all, again, it's really heartening to hear both Haris and Kumar's journey in quitting. It sounds quite challenging for both of them. And this is the kind of story that we often hear from people who want to quit. So there are two groups of people often, shall we, that will come to us. One will be the ones that generally want to quit, like both Haris and Kumar, for personal reasons. Some of them because of life events due to, for example, a health issue. Secondly, it could be because of a major life event like, a newborn, for example, or marriage. These are often the triggers that assist individuals to consider to quit. And then, of course, there's the other factor where either mom or dad catches an individual smoking, or maybe a spouse is getting quite fed up with individuals and wanting them to quit. So this will be the group that will often come forward in terms of wanting to quit smoking in the sessions that we have often.
So Haris, your story was that you fell ill. You want to share a little bit about that?
Okay, I actually tried to quit smoking like seriously at least 3 times when I managed to quit between 3 to 4 months. But all 3 times I failed. That being the third time, I decided to start smoking again because I just couldn't do my job properly. This was, I think, 2015 to 2016. But I had been considering to quit smoking for quite some time, for several years. And then in 2018, in December, I've been, smoking a lot. And towards the end of that year, I started coughing badly. And then it has come to, like, very bad that I just felt like if I could, cut out my lungs and wash it in water, I would have done it. It became so painful. Mm. So, and then I got very sick. The new year, I stayed at home for several days because it has come to very bad coughing, and then I developed fever. And then I told myself that, okay, I cannot smoke. Okay, let's just use this, just don't smoke for a few days. Unless you want to die, I told myself that. And then I managed to not smoke for 3 to 4 days, and then 5 days. And then when it came to a week and my coughing had started to improve, my health situation started to improve. And then I told myself that, okay, just don't smoke again yet. Just give it another few days until I become really, really okay. And then it came to another week. And then I told myself that, okay, I have gone to 2 weeks. Why not another week? We try. Okay, let my lungs recover first. And then it came to another week, and then another month. And then until today, I managed to, after, I think, several months, it's just, okay, I no need to smoke anymore.
Mm, so you basically gave yourself short timelines and you just kept stretching it out. How about you, Kumar? What got you started on the idea that you want to quit?
Okay. From the time I constantly started smoking when I was 15, I enjoyed it. It was cool, but I knew this was something I was not going to do for a long time. So I got an opportunity at about 19. I quit and then I got back. So when I got back, again, it was more for fun. It was being cool just to, just for fun. And then towards the end of my smoking era, I came into a phase where I started feeling a bit unfit. because of the smoking. And when you wake up in the morning, when I wake up, if I go through that day without having a cigarette, it felt great. And the moment I had my first stick of the day and I started feeling a bit lethargic and I didn't like how I was feeling. So that started to trigger me to stop smoking. But of course, I did many attempts from then. I've thrown many cigarette boxes, many new lighters, and went on to buy a new one again the next day or 1 week later. So many attempts. And then finally, I decided at one time that I was going to work and I was walking uphill and I said, you know what, I'm having difficulty breathing. I'm just 29 years old and I've been a smoker half my life. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, okay, this is not good statistics. So I said, okay, I'm going to stop. I'm going to set a date. And I smoked a lot for that 1 week. to start to hate the cigarette. I just wanted to start hating it. So for the third, between the third, fourth, fifth days, I was getting sick of it. And on my last day, after my wife's birthday, that was the last. And then the next day, I went cold turkey until today.
Wow, that's a great birthday present for your wife, I'm sure. But, you know, Dr. Amir, now we've heard sort of two different experiences. How does this fit in with what you see of smoking cessation among your clients? And also, you know, both of them did not go through a structured program. Is that necessary? Yeah. Or, you know, there's no one-size-fits-all approach, isn't there?
No, definitely. I think, you know, we've heard, like I shared before, that the most common method to quit would be, of course, going cold turkey, because it's the easiest method in terms of at least access. You just stop totally the amount of cigarettes that you use. However, if both of our friends have shared, it's often very uncomfortable. And sometimes for many people, the uncomfortability prevents them from attempting again. I think listening to Harish's story is very classical of how uncomfortable it can become for certain people. The more you smoke, particularly the more receptors that are activated, the more the uncomfortable levels that you actually face, the more likely that you're going to consider not to quit because it's just too hard. So this is where data has consistently shown that if you are using quit smoking aids, treatments, then often this particular process is made a little bit easier. However, as we know, there's going to be the issue of access towards these particular products in terms of where you get them and how you use them. So often for some people who might not have that time, it just becomes that little bit more challenging, the obstacle of actually going through it. But that's the general rule of it. I think what both have shared as well is that often smoking is either used as a coping mechanism or it's often used or linked with something that's pleasurable. And once these individuals stop taking their cigarettes and smoking, therefore either the pleasurable moments become unpleasurable. I think in the case of Kumar, it's about food, for example. The food, for some reason, doesn't taste as nice. Or there's, you know, if you don't have any methods to cope and you don't have your cigarettes, Harish has shared very nicely, it's almost like your best friend. You feel incomplete without him or her. And therefore, this is where, again, some of the challenges happen for individuals who quit and then suddenly are faced with a life event and they don't have other methods to quit. So during the course of the smoking cessation programs that we are currently building together with the Ministry of Health and the MQuit, Jom Quit program, it's actually looking at, one, to reduce the withdrawal effects that both of our friends have shared with us, which can be quite uncomfortable. Two is to manage the behavioral aspects of smoking, which are often not thought about. Better methods to cope, for example, or at least decoupling this with something that's pleasurable and allowing individuals to re-enjoy normal pleasurable activities without the use of the substances, particularly tobacco. Yeah, and of course, in terms of the program, the whole idea is actually at the very end to be abstinent of both cigarettes and also the product that is used to assist individuals to quit smoking, which could be a medicine of some type, which has a limited amount of you know, products that are active, nicotine particularly, but going on a weaning down fashion, or non-nicotine products which bind to the receptor that I shared with you just now and produces half the amount of dopamine and then gradually is weaned off so that eventually individuals will not be on anything at all and therefore they become totally abstinent with a bit more psychosocial support in that journey of quitting. So that's essentially what is actually done for the majority of clients that come for our quit smoking programs in the country and also beyond.
You know, Haris, you had a really bumpy ride. You know, you tried to quit 3 times. Did you consider going on a program like what Dr. Amir suggested or trying out those nicotine replacement aids or some sort of therapy?
Actually, I did try twice. When I tried to quit twice, I tried the nicotine replacement. One was the tablet, and the next one I tried was the gum. Both time I managed to, it really helped. This nicotine replacement helped me to, you know, you don't really feel the urge to smoke. But I believe that it all comes back to the mental strength, whatever it is. Because both times, I managed to quit. But later, because, you know, you're not supposed to, you know, depend on the nicotine replacement, how long you're going. I think it went for months. I managed to, but I was dependent on the replacement itself. So I was no longer smoking, but I became dependent on the nicotine replacement. But then the third time I managed to stop using the gum. But I think it was because of the mental preparedness to quit, because I was forcing myself. And in my case, I had to, you know, be pushed by health factors also because of the bad caffeine. Yeah.
How about you, Kumar? Did you try out any of those strategies?
I did not try anything to replace the nicotine, but I tried to associate one thing that always made me want to smoke, which was alcohol. So the story is, one of my friends suggested this to me while we were having a smoke. And he said, you know how one of my friends stopped smoking? He stopped drinking to stop smoking. I said, okay, that's a brilliant idea. I never thought about it that way.
Because that was something that you would do together, smoking and drinking.
Yes. Especially for me, because when I was not drinking, I can have one pack for 5 days or 4 days. But if I were drinking in that one session, I can finish the whole pack. Mm. So that was really a marriage, cigarettes and alcohol. So I thought, let me get the drinking out of the way and while planning to stop smoking. So I decided to stop drinking for 4 months together with smoking. Until I started drinking again without cigarettes.
Oh, so
for me,
I
didn't try all this except the drinking part. The drinking part really helped me. So something connecting me to cigarettes, I had to stop that.
And for either of you, during the withdrawal period, you know, smokers are advised to identify what is it that triggers cravings, certain situations perhaps, or certain habits. So yes, Kumar, for you, drinking was very closely associated with smoking and then you addressed that. But, you know, is it as straightforward as that for other smokers? Haris, perhaps you can share, right? You are told to find a replacement for whatever it is that it usually triggers. How difficult was it to do that?
Okay, in my case, actually, cigarettes become like a part of my life. And a cigarette has been with me through my ups and downs in my life. So it became part of my life. So that was why it was so difficult, because it's not something that is replaceable at that time. You know, it became like a very, like Dr. Amir said, it became a very good friend, a close friend. Because even your friends, there are sometimes that they are with you and there are sometimes they cannot be with you. But cigarettes will always be with you as long as you can buy it. You know, it will be when you're experiencing breakup, when you are happy, you are celebrating, you are enjoying with your friends, when you are, even if you are having trouble, every time you can have cigarette. I even consider it's like my true friend, you know.
And that's why it's not as simple as to say find what the trigger is and replace it with something else. For some people, the addiction is so strong that it has become part of you.
Yeah, and it became until later, much later, when I realized that it has become too much and I wanted to quit. And like Dr. Ami said, it's not easy because all the receptors, because I have become dependent. I wanted to quit, but it just became, you know, very hard because everything also when you're stressed, when I was stressed out, I would, you know, smoke more and more, more and more. I really wanted to quit because it came to an extent that I really needed like 5 and above cigarette sticks to, you know, really quench the thirst, you know, quench the feeling of the need for nicotine. You know, like I can be changed smoking, like especially when brainstorming to do my work and things like that. I can really chain smoke.
Mm.
And even my smoker friends were worried about me, hey, can you, you know, slow down and stop. So it's not about replacement, I think. When it comes to, in my case, yeah.
Now, after the break, we'll come back and discuss how many times do you need to quit before you quit? You know, it's different for every smoker. So we'll find out more when we come back with Associate Professor Dr. Amir Siddiq bin Aminuddin, consultant psychiatrist, and two former smokers who are joining us today, Kumar and Haris, on our Mind Matters segment. Stay tuned to Health and Living, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Shaoik, and my guests today, Associate Professor Dr. Amir Siddiq bin Aminuddin, a consultant psychiatrist for his Mind Matters segment, as well as two former smokers, Haris and Kumar. We're discussing smoking as an addiction, how people get hooked, especially if they start at a young age, below the age of 18, how quitting can be a very arduous process for some. It may be more straightforward for others, Haris and Kumar have shared sort of what was the motivation behind it and what were some of the methods that they used respectively. Dr. Amir, Haris used the word failed earlier. He said he tried to quit 3 times and he failed those times. Now, the language that we use to think about quitting probably affects our approach and our attitude towards it and whether or not we can continue with the process, right? I mean, do we say to smokers, just because you couldn't fully quit when you tried that one time, that means you failed? What might be a more constructive way to help them understand the process of quitting?
Well, I mean, if you look at the data, often it's written that an individual who manages to quit smoking successfully, in the case of both our friends over here, often they take up to 7 to 9 times. The more attempts that you actually make, the more likely that you're going to succeed. And this is where, you know, individuals might try it cold turkey, they might try it with aid, they might try it without aid, but with support, they might try it with support, with aid. So they might try a number of activities in order to assist them to quit. And eventually they find the right formula that fits for them. But what we're trying to do with the quit smoking services is actually, one, to give them, one, alternatives on methods to quit. Two, in order to provide them more information about, number one, that smoking is an addiction for them, that nicotine probably is the substance that's causing them to be addicted, and why they're feeling this uncomfortable feeling when they actually stop. And why is it that when they have a cigarette and they do these pleasurable activities, it's more pleasurable? And how can they cope once they quit the cigarettes and still be able to enjoy the pleasurable activities that they want? And this is where I think the quit smoking clinics actually do a little bit more for individuals, because they provide not only the access to equipment to assist people to quit, but also the tools of the trade, like Haris was sharing, on how can you cope when your best friend is no more with you. So this is, I think, where the benefit is in terms of people that attempt over and over again, and it gets a bit easier in terms of the way that they quit, or at least they get a little bit more expectation in terms of how or what to expect in their journey to quit. I think what I also wanted to share, and I think that we often forget, is that both Haris and Kumar, despite the fact that they were smoking, they had been consistently considering to quit. And I think this is a very important take-home message to many smokers out there. We always assume that, oh, this person is smoking, therefore he doesn't want to quit. But actually, going through the minds of our friends out there who are smoking. It's actually this desire to quit. It's just that they might not know why they're feeling uncomfortable when they attempt, or where can they actually find help. Or they might actually feel quite upset that their friends have managed to quit and they have not managed to. But I think it's really important for us to encourage our friends that are still smoking that it's still, you know, it's any day is an okay day to quit. And, you know, you might go through different journeys like the two of them, but quitting ultimately leads to a more successful, healthy life overall for everyone.
And, you know, Haris mentioned also that ultimately, despite the AIDS, it's about having that mental strength. And perhaps it equates to what you said about the desire really only set in when he was severely ill. But would it be wrong to say that somebody who's having trouble quitting is weak or has poor willpower?
Oh, definitely not. I think more often times than not, the brain is already hijacked with tobacco that the individual has actually consumed for many, many years. And therefore, the you know, as we've shared just now, the brain is dynamic. It's not static. So anything that makes it feel uncomfortable, it wants to take it. It also wants always the easy way out. How many times that we, you know, we know of the right way, but we often try to find a shortcut. So the brain is something like that too. The moment it feels uncomfortable, it wants something quicker. And therefore, you know, as both of them have shared, the desire, the call of the tobacco comes in. And this is where the, you know, you mentioned at the very beginning, the smoke-free generation and all the activities that we want to have comes in. If you're unable to see tobacco, people smoking tobacco easily, like for example in New Zealand, the desire for individuals who are now quit or wanting to quit becomes much, much easier. If it's difficult for you to purchase a cigarette product, it also makes it much easier for individuals who are quit to stay quit and the individuals who wants to quit to attempt to quit, because it's just that little bit more difficult. And this includes, for example, an increase in price that is beyond what individuals can actually afford, like they have in Australia and New Zealand, for example. So these are just some strategies and real-life world experiences which just assists people who are quitting to maintain their quit attempt and also those who desire to quit to make that quit attempt.
Kumar, I'd like to get your thoughts. I mean, you started really young. What do you think would help stop young people from starting like you did?
I think education in school will be helpful, which I see they are doing now. And also the policies that banning sales of cigarettes to certain age and below, which is enforced now. Those days, we can just walk in and just buy a pack of cigarettes. And the excuse is we are buying it for our uncle or for our father or something. So that's fine. We get away with that. So today, it's a little bit more difficult. I believe enforcement such as this and education to the children, so that will help.
Mm, what about you, Haris? What do you think will help?
I agree with what Dr. Amir said about, you know, making it hard to access cigarettes. Because in my case, I also, you know, I started because at that time it was so easy to, I think it's still very easy now for underage children to get access to cigarettes. One thing that helped me to stay quit also, it was not the main factor, but one thing that helped me to stay free of cigarette because 2018, if you remember, there was this nationwide ban on smoking at eateries. One thing that I enjoyed doing when I was smoking because I could, you know, sit down together with friends, having drinks and maybe mee goreng lepak at mama and then have our cigarette. Mm. That is one of the activities that I, you know, largely associated with smoking. Yeah. Then it helped me to, you know, because, oh, what for me, because I no longer can smoke at while enjoying my drinks and, you know.
Mm, so like that. Because that environment was taken away, that's just yet another incentive not to smoke.
Yes.
Yeah. Which I think brings me to vaping, right? Some people now argue that vaping or e-cigarettes are less harmful than cigarette smoking and could be used to prevent or help people to cut down on smoking. Dr. Amir, your thoughts first about vaping?
Well, I think it really depends on what is the definition of harm that you're talking about. If you're talking about the constituents of poisons, then yes, there's a little bit less harm. However, if you're talking about the consequences of vaping in society, then there's a lot of questions about of this particular harm. For example, are we not reintroducing the behavior of smoking or the method but using a different device is one question. That's a harm. What about all the other harmful constituents that we are not aware of? And of course, more importantly, with some of the devices, the introduction of illicit drugs within it, which we're seeing a rise, or at least some cases out there. So there are different types of harm. And of course, we have to remember that some of these products don't have any quality control and they might suddenly blow up in your face. So is that not a harm that one needs to consider? So it really depends on what you mean by harm. You know, we often look at it from one dimension, but if you look at it from multiple dimensions, then one wonders whether it is as safe as it's made to be. Mm. In terms of the data to suggest that it might help individuals to quit, it might help in a very controlled setting. But in the way that we are seeing it being used at the moment, probably you're going to have more difficulties with it in society rather than without it.
So for you, there are clear harms, just not within a very limited definition. But Haris and Kumar, is vaping something that you have thought of trying because you've quit? Or, you know, what would you advise to other people who may be thinking about vaping?
I actually have tried vaping. This was back, I think, when all this vaping culture started, I think 2015, 2016. But I tried for 1 month, but it didn't suit me because I was very worried. Because back then, vaping only started in Malaysia, and many of the vape juice was, I was more worried of the harm that comes from vaping then, because the only accessible and cheap vaping juice was the one that were homemade, you know, like so many people tried to become entrepreneurs back then, and they make this vaping juice and sell it for quite a good price compared to the one imported one. It wasn't easy for you to get the imported ones. They really want the one that were produced by proper companies, you know. But yeah, I've seen my friends who managed to switch from smoking to only vaping, but they stuck with vaping now. Mm-hmm. And I also seen some friends who tried vaping to quit smoking, but then they stuck with both. They have to smoke and also vaping. So I'm not sure how much helpful it is because I only tried for a month. But I think it goes back to if you want to quit, just quit.
All right. What do you think, Kumar?
As I did not try vaping because I quit in 2010. So back then, I don't think there were much this kind of options. So I've never tried it. But I see a lot of my friends who are going through the same thing. They stop real cigarettes, they go into vaping or e-cigarettes, and now they are hooked into that. So for me, like Haris mentioned, if you want to quit, I think just quit. Maybe you can take this as a step to reduce, but completely, if you want to quit, just quit. Because it is now categorized as the same thing. Cigarettes, e-cigarettes, vaping, everything is banned. If you can't smoke indoors, you can't smoke e-cigarettes, you can't smoke vapes.
Well, so, I wish they are not doing a great job enforcing much of this. And I think it's not consistent right now, it seems to me. Can I get a final message from each of you, you know, when it comes to quitting smoking? At the end of the day, what is your message when it comes to quitting?
Message I want to give is, you know, one thing I really, really, this is the message not for the smokers, but I think to the people around smokers, because I've been told countless times that by people who didn't smoke, who never tried smoking, that quitting smoking is easy. Stop doing that if you genuinely want your family member or friends or whoever you want to quit smoking, to really quit smoking, you know. One thing I think is lacking during my journey to quit smoking was support. Because I know that many people, my family members, even my wife, you know, they pushed me. They wanted me to quit smoking. But I think the proper support, you know, like the being understanding of the journey itself is very important. Because many people, they think that, you just don't smoke. You just quit smoking. You just do it. You know, it's easy. Why do you want to smoke? It's harmful to, you know, just telling us harmful, you know, all this, you know, why you want to burn your money. We smokers, especially when you have been smoking for quite some time, it's no longer something that is troublesome to us. But it's the support. You, if you want your friends or family members to quit smoking, you need to be supportive. You need to encourage them and then try to help them, you know, by anything that, any way that you can, you know, by being supportive.
So if you say that it's not supportive for me to say to you, just quit, it's so easy, what's wrong with you? On the flip side, what is supportive? What would you have liked people to say to you?
It's like, you know, being understanding and then, you know, offering help. And then sometimes I think one really hard thing to do is because smokers, when you're really heavy smokers and you're dependent on smoking, people should understand that stress also induces smokers to smoke more. So maybe try to, you know, be gentle and not inducing more stress. Like sometimes people telling me to stop smoking also made me more stressful and made me wanting to smoke, you know. That's one of the things.
All right. And what about you, Kumar?
Okay, Dr. Ami and Hari has mentioned a few points earlier, and actually that's absolutely right. So I think what will really help someone to quit is, and what helped me was, first of all, I asked myself, why am I smoking? And then I asked myself, why do I need to stop smoking? And then I found a very good reason to stop smoking. And I had to get support, which was my wife. So I told her I was going to stop smoking. So you can expect this, me being moody and all this stuff. So, you know, you just helped me out with that. And that kind of helped me. And I also found reasons to keep myself busy, get healthier, like going to the gym. So eventually, first 2 weeks is going to be difficult. Maybe longer, maybe shorter for different people, but roughly about there for me. For the many times that I quit, it's about 2 weeks. And then eventually, your hand, you just smell better. Your hand smells fresh. Food tastes better. Life is better. You feel great. So that will keep you going more.
Dr. Amir, for somebody who's listening, who has probably entertained the idea of quitting, what's your message?
Well, I think, first of all, listen to this particular segment. If you haven't listened properly, listen again. That's going to be the first advice. I think secondly is that, as I've shared with you just now, we've actually developed in Neurosimulaya an app getting every Malaysian to participate in quitting called Gempa. Sadly, at the moment, it's mainly an Android app, but it has, for example, information about what to expect, as Kumar had mentioned, when individuals try to quit. It also has some advice on how or to cope, for example, like Haris has mentioned just now. So I think that might be sort of like your little pocket friend that you might be able to use, which I hope might be quite helpful for some of you out there. So, you know, I think most importantly is for those of us who are still smoking, it's never too late to quit. Quitting is not going to be easy. But definitely by listening to this particular segment from Kumar and Haris and probably the support that's out there from the Ministry of Health to the MQuitJumQuit.com program, you might be able to make that quit attempt this year.
All right. And that app, how do you spell Gempa?
G-E-M-P-A-Q.
All right. And you can download that if you have an Android phone. Thank you so much for speaking to me today. I've been speaking to Associate Professor Dr. Amir Siddiq bin Aminuddin, consultant psychiatrist, Kumar and Haris, two ex-smokers, sharing their experience, some tips that they wanted to share when it comes to quitting smoking for our Mind Matters show today. This has been Health and Living, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.